Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And, it's the holidays. Guys, I have to admit, I'm really excited. I've got about a little over a week left until I get about 2 weeks off over the Christmas and New Year, a holiday break here. I'm really looking forward to it. I know there's still a long ways to go, but it's been a while since I've had a break and a rest. I'm just looking forward to kicking back, enjoying all the fun things that the season has to offer, and also just getting a little bit of R&R, catching up on the pile of books that I got piled up here, catch up on some Netflix and, you know, good stuff like that, catch up with friends and family. Really looking forward to, but crazy is the name of the game at this time of year. I mean, for example, we had two school concerts to attend to this night. It was one, and then as soon as that was over, straight on to the other one. But that's part of the fun of the holiday season. So I hope wherever you are that you're having a good one as well. And it's going to get a lot busier and a lot crazier as the days pass here, you know, including tomorrow night. It's an office party for us at work. And that's always a good time. And then next week, not going to be so much fun because our clients always get a little bit crazy trying to get everything in before the end of the year, even though most of the government agencies and regulatory bodies that we deal with or I deal with in my professional life, they all shut down and things don't really get going again. Well, they don't get going again until the new year, so... Well, their wishes are in command, and they pay us to do what we do, so I don't mind so much. It just can make an extra, you know, what's already a hectic season, extra hectic. But anyhow, it is what it is. But surprisingly, you know, there is still a lot of news out there in the Formula One world. I mean, usually it's like dropping off the edge of a precipice once you get to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. I mean, there's always usually a little bit coming out the first week or so afterwards, but we had testing, as you know, they've had postseason testing at Abu Dhabi for the past several years, but still a lot of things going on. I mean, the 2021 drivers market, the silly season has already begun in earnest. Lots of talk still. I mean, we talked about it in depth last week, the whole possibility of Verstappen to Ferrari, or from Hamilton to Ferrari, and Vettel anywhere but Mercedes or Ferrari, and you know, all sorts of different things. Or perhaps Seb goes back to a Ferrari for a reduced price, or I guess it's not a hometown discount, but you know what I mean. But still plenty of news items out there, so we're going to dive right into, which is great, because at this time of year I sometimes struggle a little bit for content, and you know, I'd like to keep the show going around all year long, especially more so in the off season between Abu Dhabi and the Australian Grand Prix at the beginning of March, because I mean, Formula One is it's our passion, right? I mean, everybody listening to this podcast does so for a reason, and that's because we can't get enough of Formula One, watching it, listening to it, reading about it, talking about it, tweeting about it, whatever your fix is. It's always a tough time of year to get through. I mean, as much as I enjoy the winter for not only the holiday season, but I enjoy skiing and all sorts of different things. I mean, hockey season's on, and this is always a great time of year, so I enjoy it. But it's not having Formula One, or at least not having Formula One in the competitive sense, tends to leave a very big gap in the entertainment part of my life. So anytime that I can find something to chat about, then that is obviously more than welcome. I know more than one of you out there in listening to this show right now can agree with that sentiment. I guess how hardcore of a Formula One nerd we are might dictate how much of a struggle the next 3 months is going to be. But I guess now I haven't checked exactly the countdown calendar, but I know last week it was just over 100 days. So I think we're down into double digits. So that's progress. Let's just put it that way. But anyways, let's start off with the news. And Ferrari said that they're flattered that Lewis Hamilton, quote, wants to join us. And that comes from Ferrari CEO Lewis Camilleri. And he says that Hamilton's meeting with Chairman John Elkann has been blown out of proportion. But he did indicate And he did say that that Hamilton has a little bit of interest in the move. Now, I don't know if this is kind of like the Dumb and Dumber thing with, you're saying there's a chance when Mary says to Lloyd, you know, it's more like one in a million. I'm kind of wondering if that's kind of the same sort of thing. I'm not completely ruling Hamilton to Ferrari out. I just can't see it. I mean, I can envision that that scenario, but my more logical side says that the Hamilton's going to re-sign with Mercedes. I mean, why give up a good thing unless, you know, he figures he still has a world championship in it, and at this point in his career, he still relishes a challenge and would be up for trying to do that at Ferrari. Of course, it would have a lot to do with what they could really deliver in terms of a championship caliber car, not just this year, but the next year as well. And I think that's going to, well, obviously this year's over, but next year, I mean, this year wasn't really the best advertisement. And if you're looking to try and get a top-level driver into your team, I mean, they've already got a couple of very good drivers. I know Vettel's had, obviously, his struggles over the past couple of seasons, but, I mean, he is a four-time world champion. And, I mean, that's they got another guy in Charles Leclerc who has all the makings of a Formula One world champion. So, I mean, from that point of view, I mean, I don't think that they'll ever have any trouble attracting top-level talent to Ferrari. I mean, they are the most storied mark in the entire world. I mean, anybody that thinks of racing cars and luxury sports cars or luxury cars of any kind, I mean, Ferrari is always going to be, I think, the top name that is going to roll off the majority of most people's tongues whenever that question is put to them. I mean, I know there's plenty of fantastic different car manufacturers out there, especially when it comes to racing and luxury cars and all that, but Ferrari does kind of stand a little bit apart from everyone else. I mean, considering their history, both on and off the track, and just the iconic stature that they have. But yeah, it still is an interesting one. And I've thought about it at length over the past week since this story has kind of been building up a little bit of a head of steam. And, you know, I think that that there is a little bit some of it, but I had a very nice email from Richard LeBlanc, who's a good friend of the show, and he wrote a wonderful long email, so thank you very much for that, Richard. I mean, basically I have an entire show outline here. I mean, there's so much wonderful things in here and lots of good points. Anyways, Richard weighed in and had this to say about Hamilton to Ferrari, and I quote, "Do you not think that this is just a very transparent bargaining tactic to set the stage for Hamilton's possibly last F1 contract with Mercedes? Unless Hamilton's camp raises the specter of losing him to Ferrari, the only viable contender, Hamilton has little bargaining position with Mercedes going into contracts. I see this rumor as a tactical necessity, but in reality, there is only an infinitesimally small likelihood of Hamilton going to Ferrari, as he would then completely derail the probability of equally and possibly surpassing Schumacher's 7 world championships." And I think those are a couple of very, very good points that that Richard makes in that line of thought there. And I think that by and large, it could be a bargaining tactic. I mean, as much as he's kind of interested and kind of dropped some, I wouldn't say outright hints, but I mean some subtle hints that that he would be open to going to Ferrari. I mean, I would think that the meetings with Elkman are legit. I mean, I don't think that Ferrari would gain anything by spreading fake news, obviously. So I mean, we can take that as fact at this point. But I think that it could be, as Richard says, a very transparent bargaining tactic. I think maybe that is one of the things that that he has at this point is you know, that he could go somewhere else, and logically the only other team that could afford that kind of money would be Ferrari, who, like Mercedes, have very deep pockets and lots of money to work with. I mean, Red Bull is an interesting one, but I mean, I couldn't really see that, or any other team, unless somebody was able to somehow amass so much sponsorship money or whatever from their investors to able to land Hamilton. But I mean, the thing is, I mean, Hamilton said a couple of weeks ago or a month or two ago something about the story or his story in Formula One hasn't been completely finished or written. I can't remember his exact line there, but it was something to that effect. I mean, you have to think that now that he is so close to Michael Schumacher's records, I mean, he's already passed him in many categories, but the seven world championships, that's the big one, right? So, I mean, he has the opportunity to equal Michael's record this year. And I mean, like I was saying, I think I say this each and every week. I mean, it seems like the time that Hamilton went from a quadruple world champion to a six-time world champion seems like it passed in a blink of an eye. When at four world championships, it still was kind of like, I don't know, it seems like it would be a real feat for him to pull it off. But now here we are less than 2 years later, I mean, going into the start of the 2020 season, this is a realistic thing that could happen this year as he homes in on this, and it is a realistic possibility. But the big question is, where does he have the best shot to win championships and win races with on a consistent and regular basis? And the answer is Mercedes. And he's proven that over the past several years, and obviously with all the races and championships he's won. However, if Ferrari is able to get their act together and is able to build a car that could deliver a world championship, you would have to think that going into 2021 could be an attractive opportunity for Lewis Hamilton, because if he wins the world championship again in 2020, then he equals Michael's record at seven. And then if he was to switch to Ferrari for 2021, assuming they have a championship caliber car, then he could potentially become the number one guy at Ferrari, driving a Ferrari and beating the guy that won so many championships with Ferrari and was won that seventh world championship as a Ferrari driver. And you just have to think that would be an attractive opportunity for anyone. So whether or not that happens, I just don't think that Lewis is really in a rush to do it. I think that maybe he sits back, maybe plays it cool, sees how the season plays out. And then I think maybe depending on how that goes, I think that if maybe he gets the world championship, then I think there's more possibility that he goes to Ferrari. But I think that if maybe this year things don't go quite as well with the Mercedes, well, not that things aren't going to go well, but say Ferrari gets it right this year, and say we see Vettel or Leclerc as a world championship, or perhaps even Honda and Red Bull find lightning in a bottle and are able to win a world championship. Plenty more to talk about. Anyways, I just want to take a quick break away from the show here just to talk about our good friends at Vivid Seats. And of course, Christmas is coming up just around the corner in under 2 weeks now. And if you're looking for a gift for the sports fan in your life this holiday season, don't forget to check out Vivid Seats, because they are the top source for tickets and the events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back, and that's called Vivid Seats Rewards. So go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. And also, this is really cool. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee, from the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more. Vivid Seats has it all. So download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. And remember, at checkout for new users, enter my special promo code OVERTIME at checkout and receive a discount of up to $100. And remember, use my special promo code OVERTIME at checkout and you can receive a discount of up to $100 for first-time buyers. All right, well, moving along, we're going to get away, well, not really, we're going to still stick on this one, but Hamilton said that now that there's been the talk about him possibly moving on after next year, he's saying that a lot of his rivals, or all his rivals, have been calling Mercedes boss Total Wolf about his seat at Mercedes. And who wouldn't, right? I mean, that is the best team with the best car, or they've had the best car most of the time over the past several years. So if you want a really good shot to win a world championship, you just have to think that is just that much better if you're in a Mercedes. And there's only two guys that have been able to do that over the past several years. Obviously, Lewis Hamilton has won a bucket load of championships since 2014. And Nico Rosberg even managed to sneak one in there in 2016, which seems like a long time ago now. I mean, it's 3 years ago, but that really does seem like ancient history. Anyways, one name that is thrown out there is Fernando Alonso. We talked about him last week, and he said that that he's interested in coming back to Formula One. And he did say when he left Formula One at the end of last year to pursue other things like Le Mans and World Endurance Championships and Indy and all these different things that he's been doing away from Formula One, that he would be interested to come back. He didn't close the door and say, you know, that's it, I'm done with Formula One. It was very much he was taking a wait and see approach. And one of the things he did say was that that he wanted to see how the new regulations and the new cars were going to shake out and that whole process. So I guess obviously it meets Fernando's approval. So that's one name that's out there. I mean, even though he will be, I think, 39 this year, without checking my notes here. Anyways, he would be, I think he would be 39 going on 40 in 2021. But the thing is, age doesn't really seem to matter in pro sports anymore. I mean, look at the NFL. I mean, Tom Brady, he must be, what, about 54 right now? I mean, that guy seems like he's been around forever. Sorry, Patriot fan. I don't mean to throw shade at Brady. Anyways, I mean, and Brady and guys like that are obviously a bit of an exception to the rule. I know that professional football, for example, is an extremely brutal sport, and most guys that that play professionally only last a couple of seasons, and the guys that have the mega contracts around for a long, long time really aren't the norm. So, I mean, a guy like Tom Brady is a bit of a fluke in that category. But in Formula One and in racing, it seems that that the guys are racing longer. I mean, because in the old days, I mean, I don't think, I know for a fact that Michael Schumacher was the guy that that really changed the whole approach to Formula One as a driver, from the fitness, the nutrition, the whole complete approach that he took to the sport. It wasn't so much, you know, show up on testing or qualifying or race days, whatever it might be. You know, you're going out and drinking beer and smoking in between and all that sort of stuff. I mean, he really brought it to the next level. And that was the model, the example that that all these guys have followed since. And I mean, when we look at these guys, I mean, they are in an amazing physical shape. I mean, they're more like fighter pilots than athletes. I mean, with the what they have to go through. I mean, they're amazing athletes in their own right. But these guys that are top level racing drivers, just the G-forces and everything that they have to put up with in the car. I mean, it is physically demanding, unlike any other sport. But the thing is, too, like with Fernando, I mean, he is a little bit older, but I mean, he is still just as quick as he's ever been. So it would be interesting to see what he could do in a good car. I mean, the obvious link would be for him to go back to McLaren, because they kind of left that door open. So who knows? That would, of course, mean that Carlos Sainz or Lando Norris wouldn't be coming back. I'm not sure what their contract status is for 2021. And would you possibly want to punt one of those guys to the side, say, if they are under contract for 2021, if Fernando says that he's interested and he wants to come back? Anyways, Hamilton, talking about the interest in his seat, had to say, quote, "It is an interesting time because there's a lot of drivers who are seeking positions everywhere. I'm talking about the calls Toto gets from every driver, including the one who was just up here recently asking to come. Everyone is trying to leave their team to come where we are, which is understandable, which is an understandable thing, because everybody wants to win. They want to be part of a winning formula. But I don't think it's a stressful thing at the moment. There's always a clear pathway of communication between myself and Toto. There have never been any secrets, and that won't change." And I think that is another big thing that that will really decide what happens with Lewis Hamilton and his decision to stay with Formula One, and that is whether or not Toto Wolff decides whether or not he wants to stay or go. And there's been this story that he's been loosely linked with the top job at Formula One to replace Chase Carey. And that story's been out for several months now. I mean, that goes back to the summer at least. And it's kind of popped up again in recent weeks. And Toto is kind of, I wouldn't say he's out now rubbished it, but he's downplayed it quite a bit, saying that he isn't really all that interested in it. But he has dropped a couple real big hints this week that he is going to stay. as team principal as at Mercedes, despite this constant chatter or rumors, whatever you want to call it, about him taking over the top job at Formula One from 2020 onwards. When he was asked about his future, he told Motorsport.com, quote, "What I found out is that I enjoy the relationships within the team and the relationships that the decision makers in Daimler. That is a fundamental part of my well-being. They have really trusted us and given us all the room that we need to make this team successful, and I'm not taking it lightly to come up with the right decision for all of us. This is a process that's going to take a bit of time, but I don't see it surprises as it stands." So, I mean, yeah, I mean, when you look at what they've done at Mercedes over the past several years, I mean, it really has been unprecedented, and then at least in recent years. I mean, we've seen teams dominate in Formula One before. I mean, you go back to Ferrari in the early 2000s. You look at McLaren in the 80s. I mean, different teams have had their time in the spotlight. I mean, that's just a couple of examples. But what really sets Mercedes apart for me, I mean, I've been watching Formula One since I was a kid growing up in the 80s. And of course, when you're young, you see it in a little bit different eyes. But especially now with all the coverage you get is different from back then. But the thing is that really strikes me every time I watch a race and every time that they win, that this really seems like a group of people to me that really enjoys going out. And they seem just as happy winning this race for the 99th time or whatever it is, as it was the first time. I mean, they really look like they're having fun going out there, and they love racing and love winning, and it really sounds, at least from the outside, that they really have a good thing going. And you can see from Toto Wolff, from his point, from his position of team principal, that when you have the backing of a major company like Daimler, and they're willing to put in the money and the support and whatever they need, and give them the freedom to go and do what they want, I mean, that really is, I wouldn't say it's a carte blanche. Well, it is to a certain extent, but I mean, that is part of the framework that has really set this team up for all the success that they've had. But I mean, when Toto kind of drops that that hint and says that he doesn't see any surprises coming, that that sounds to me like a guy that's pretty happy to stay where he is and keep doing what he's doing for a little while longer, at any rate. So moving along, talking about Hamilton's rivals, the Christian Horner, team principal at Red Bull, he believes that he doesn't see any reason why the top drivers would want to change teams in 2021. And that includes Max Verstappen, which drives for his own team right now. I mean, the Toto Wolff said last week he believes there's a 75% chance of Hamilton staying. And Hamilton, if he retires or if he goes somewhere else, Verstappen, you'd have to think, is the guy that Mercedes would want to go after. I mean, that would just seem logical. I mean, Max is just, I mean, he is a world champion in waiting. All he really needs is the car to do it. I mean, Red Bull have been good. I mean, he's won races. I mean, he's had some fantastic outings for them over the past several years, but I don't think that it should come as a shock to many people that when I say I really wonder what Max could do if he was in a really good car and not just a Red Bull. And I don't mean to rubbish them or talk them down in any ways, but we've seen how dominant Lewis Hamilton is in a Mercedes. Could you imagine what it would be like with Max Verstappen? It would really be something to see. I mean, Leclerc, that he's out of the equation. I mean, he's Ferrari's guy. He's the future of Ferrari. And Vettel, I think, is obviously, I think his window with of opportunity at Ferrari to win a championship has passed. I really don't know what to expect in terms of whether or not he'll stay beyond 2020, and if he does, what sort of role he'll have with the team. You know, I could see maybe them offering him a reduced contract. Maybe he would then become the official number two guy to Leclerc, but that's something else. But I think it's a kind of a bold prediction on the part of Christian Horner to say that he doesn't see or he expects all these top guys are going to stay with their current teams. I mean, I really understand that point of view. I mean, it would really take something to shake it up, but I think it really depends what's going to happen. I think that it's not set in stone. Like I was saying a little bit earlier, that the Lewis, I think, There is something to this Ferrari story. And like I say, I mean, if he wins the championship this year, he ties Schumacher at 7 driving for Mercedes, then I'd say that there's some smoke to that fire to Mercedes. And then also Verstappen was saying is that his future at Red Bull really hangs on their start to 2020 next year. And that to me seems like a very logical and a very, it's what you kind of expect him to say. I mean, they have to come up with something special. I mean, he got a couple of race wins this year, but again, it wasn't so much that Red Bull were that much better. It was just that Ferrari were that much worse. And when Ferrari kind of got it together in the second half of the season, I know there's that whole discussion we can have about the illegal oil burning and all these shady things they are alleged to have been doing with the engines. Let's just put that to aside and just take the other conversation. They were for a while a little bit better than everybody else. I know it was a small window, but the thing was that when they kind of reasserted themselves or got back on track, they were better than Red Bull. The Ferrari's problem was that they just did not have the downforce. They didn't have the grip. They just didn't have the cornering speed. And it took them two-thirds or three-quarters of the season to be able to match Red Bull in that. I mean, their straight-line speed, that was without question the entire year. But they really got the concept on the SF90 wrong. And so it did kind of give opportunities to Red Bull in that way. And I think that that's... I don't want to take anything away from them because they were the second-best team after Mercedes. But... To go from there to really do something that's really going to impress Max Verstappen and his team, and again, just a little bit of a going off on a tangent here. I don't understand why every time there is a race, why we have to see his dad, Jos Verstappen, in the pits. I mean, he's a retired Formula One driver. He's Max's dad. Yeah, it's kind of cool because he's a second-generation driver, but, you know, we didn't see lots of pictures of, like, Keke Rosberg when Nico was in Formula One and stuff like that. I know he was kind of a way out of the picture, but you get what I mean. Why do we have to see Jos all the time? Anyways, rant over. Anyways, that's the thing. I mean, they're going to have to do something special to really put, their best foot forward and really make an attractive offer to Max. And, I mean, it's only going to partly be money. I mean, Max's future is set. He's going to be in Formula One for a long time. There's a lot of money left to be made. But you know that he knows that he's good. I mean, there's no question that he's good. And we all know that he can win races. We all know how fast this guy is. We know that he's got that edge. He's got that grit. I mean, sometimes it's landed him in trouble, this bit of aggressive nature that he has. But, I mean, that's just the kind of driver that Max Verstappen is. I think it's not just the completely the rashness and the impulsive nature of youth. That's got something to do with it. But, I mean, Max is just one of those guys. He's an aggressive driver. You leave a bit of a gap open. You leave an inch there, he's going to see it as a mile, and he's going to stick his nose in there. He's going to try and put his car up the inside and pass you. And, I mean, he's made some impressive passes on guys over the years, passing in places and at times that a lot of people don't expect. So he knows that he has the talent to do it, to win races in Formula One. And of course, from there, this is the obvious statement of the show tonight, that race wins and more of them that you get do lead to world champions, their championships. So the best thing that Red Bull can do to keep him there for 2021 and beyond is to really come up with a good car for next year. And they did make improvements this year. I mean, I know that Honda's statement about a year ago was that they wanted to deliver them or have an engine package for Red Bull that was going to at least keep them on equal terms or same sort of footing that they were the past couple of years with Renault. And they totally succeeded with that. But I think that even though it took a little while for them to get that first win, it didn't come until Austria, but Mercedes was running away with it at that point. I mean, they won those first 8 races and they got beaten outright. Max was just better. That combination in Austria that day of Max Verstappen plus Red Bull plus Honda was the one to have. And I mean, he goes on and gets a couple more wins as the season goes on. And that has been kind of the theme that the past several years. Max would get a couple of wins. Ricardo would get a couple of wins. We'd see them on the podium from time to time. But if they really want to keep Max here for the long term, they're going to have to be able to go beyond that. They're going to be able to, you know, take a season where he might expect to get two or three wins and be, I don't want to say a footnote, but it's kind of in the conversation, but more one of those kind of interesting facts. That, yeah, it was kind of cool that Max won, whatever, two, three, four races this year, but still didn't have a legit shot to win the championship because he was still like 200 points behind Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes, who ultimately went on to do it. So for them to really take it to the next level, they're going to have to really prove to him that they can break out of that and go the step further, not just make it, okay, well, I won three races last year, but now we won four or maybe five. He's really got to see that there's something there that that he's going to realize that, okay, well, if we're going in the right direction and we're closing that gap to Mercedes, we can be as fast as them or faster and we can win races. And I really see myself as winning a championship here. So we'll wait and see. That to me seems to be a bit of a, it remains to be seen, obviously. But anyways, Verstappen, he's getting the props that he deserves. And, well, let's just say that Horner's trying to kill him with kindness. I mean, he's, you know, Max is saying one thing, that the start of 2020 is going to have a lot to do in deciding his future with Red Bull. But on the other side, Horner is coming out and saying things in the media that you need to. I mean, you want to make sure that Max knows he's the guy, that he's valued, that he's important there. And Horner had to say, quote, "I think it's been Max's strongest year in F1. Three pole positions, albeit we kept only two of them. Three victories, nine podiums is a really impressive performance this year. I think the way Max has driven as well has been very, very positive. I think overall, it's been a more consistent season and we had some good results. But for me, that is also a pretty natural thing where, just by experience, I think that just helps you get to deliver more constant results." So yeah, that's true. But you know, the interesting thing is, and we're going to talk more about the F1 Drive to Survive series a little bit later on, but I thought it was an interesting kind of look last year in the first season they came out, when it was all about the, I mean, the story at that time up until the middle of the summer in August, when Danny Ricciardo said that he decided not to renew with Red Bull and was going to go to Renault instead. But it was interesting to get some of these behind the pictures or behind the scenes things. I remember, I think it was at Monaco, and I think that he was either talking to Ricciardo or his parents. I think it was, he was talking to Danny Ricciardo's dad, and just Horner, that is, and just really going on how much he admires him and all these different things. And I mean, he knows the right things to say and how to say it. And I mean, it is important. I'm not saying that he's being insincere. I'm not saying that by any means at all, but you know, that is the thing, that the people need to know that they're valued and appreciated wherever they are. And that, I don't think that is just for sports, but I mean, I think that's at any walk of life in any company and any walk of life. I think people need to know that they're appreciated. So I thought that was kind of an interesting one to see it. And he's going on and he's doing and saying the same things for Max Verstappen. So, I mean, they're going to try, obviously, to sign Max Verstappen, and it will be kind of interesting to see who blinks first in this this silly season for the 2021 market. Who's going to sign where first? And I think that will really dictate as to whether or not it's going to stay the same as Christian Horner predicts, or if one of these big names manages to sign somewhere else and then that kind of snowballs. I think that the longer it goes, the longer it drags out, the more likely it is that the status quo will remain the same, and guys and teams will want to get things locked down for 2020 on and beyond. Anyways, time for a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Fernando Alonso. So don't go away, we'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 Whiskey declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. Talking about Fernando Alonso, we were just talking about him a little bit earlier in the show. We were talking about him last week, and this is a bit of a funny one. This was a story I found on motorsport.com, and it's entitled Alonso Hits Back at Self-Centered Suggestions, and there's a kind of a funny picture of Fernando sitting on the podium with a bit of an agonized grin on his face. Let's put it back that way. So anyways, the gist of the story is that had to answer back at some of the suggestion that he's a self-centered driver, and but he did go on to say that he was never involved in any of the kind of troubles that at Ferrari that they had this year with Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel. So well, that is true, we have to give him that, although let's just say that his first season with Lewis Hamilton was way back in 2008 or whenever it was. Yeah, they didn't crash into each other or anything on the track, but let's just say there was a fair amount of friction between them. Anyways, at the FIA Prize Gala in Paris last weekend, Alonso was asked about that. He had to say, quote, "I think the reputation is always one thing and the facts are different. When you see crashing teammates and things like that, as we saw this year, and you see every year between teammates, then my image is you will see the slipstream I gave at Monza and the slipstream in Spa. I know these collaborations, so when we talk about reputation, it's better if we look at the facts." So Alonso goes on then to elaborate that that he doesn't have any problem jumping out of the car with his teammates, Sebastian Buemi and Kazuki Nakajima, and all these different things, and he really kind of talks himself up a little bit. I mean, I know there have been these suggestions out there, but I always found it a little bit amusing, especially when he was having the problems at McLaren. Not just him specifically, it was just when they were having the first couple of years of Honda engines and things were going wrong, he would always, I'd find on the radio, kind of talk himself up and always lay the blame squarely at Honda, which, you know, I think was fair, to be quite honest. I mean, they were basically developing the engine on the track because they were just so far behind all the other teams. I mean, really was a huge risk that that didn't pan out for them. But Fernando doesn't have any problem, talking himself up to a certain degree. So I'll put that one out to you guys. What do you think? Do you think that Fernando's self-centered reputation is deserved or not? I'm somewhere in the middle. Anyways, let's talk a little bit more about Ferrari and team principal Matteo Binotto believes that Ferrari don't need what he calls severe changes to avoid the errors that really cost the team throughout the year in 2019. And, well, I think it is interesting, but a lot of the things were self-inflicted, let's be quite honest. I mean, some were by the drivers, some were because of the team, some of it was because the car wasn't all that great. But Binotto had to say, quote, "I think each single mistake, if you tackle it from a lesson learned point of view, you can improve yourself. I think there's nothing that has to be changed, changes severely. I think it's a matter of experience. We always said we are a young team, especially in the roles. We are on a very steep learning curve. So it's really a matter of making sure that whatever happens this season has been addressed." So that's very good. I think that's an interesting insight into what was going on there. And that is true. I think that they are, in some respects, a young team. And they did okay. But doing okay isn't good enough to win a world championship in Formula One. Be it in the Constructors, be it in the Drivers' World Championship, you have to be better than just okay. And for most of the season, they were just okay, and that was at the best of times too. And if it wasn't for the bright light of Charles Leclerc, then I think it would have been, you know, a pretty dire season for them indeed. I know that hindsight and is 2020 and all that, and we could sit here and speculate, well, what it would have been like if Kimi had stayed for another year instead of going to Alfa Romeo. And well, I guess it's a fair conversation, but the thing is, I mean, Charles had a very good year for Ferrari. I mean, it was always going to take a while for him to sort of settle in. I mean, he only had 1 year previously in Formula One. I mean, it was a good rookie season in Formula One in 2019 with Sauber Alfa Romeo Racing. And I think he parlayed that very well into his first year with Ferrari, his rookie year as a Ferrari driver, if you want to call it that. I mean, he made some mistakes. He had some times when the car let him down. Monaco was one. I mean, that was just the one race of the whole year, his home race in his hometown, and it just the car just let him down completely, which is so disappointing. But then you have Bahrain, and then when the car let him down as well. But then on the flip side, you had the mistake he made when he crashed in qualifying at Azerbaijan Grand Prix just before the castle there. But I mean, all in all, I mean, Charles had an excellent year this year. And I can see that where, you know, Binotto says that they need to make some little changes here and there. I mean, they do have, they've got all the resources for Ferrari. So you know that there's very talented and smart people there. You know that budget isn't an issue. You know that getting drivers isn't an issue, just like it is for Mercedes. So it's just managing all these little things. I think for Ferrari, like Binotto says, it's all in the details. They don't need to make any big, major, and severe changes. I think that they've dealt with the issue of Leclerc and Vettel. They did it after Brazil. They said they did it behind closed doors. They haven't disclosed what the results of those meetings were publicly, that they had individually and then collectively as a group. And I think that's a good way to handle the situation. But, you know, I think that they really need to focus when it comes down to them. I think that the idea that they had, the concept behind the SF90 was just flawed. Obviously, it didn't work. And it was just because Mercedes couldn't get their car dialed in during winter testing that made the Ferrari look that much better. And of course, once we got out of the quote-unquote the winter championship into the real championship in March in Australia, that the car's true colors really showed themselves. The Mercedes was good and the Ferrari wasn't very good at all, and it took a long time, and by the time Ferrari was able to figure it out, it was over. I mean, the world championship was pretty much decided by the beginning of the summer. I mean, there was still, I mean, obviously Hamilton had to cross that theoretical line, that mathematical line, that okay, nobody more can catch me. But by the time we got to let's say the European season, that, you know, 8 wins in the beginning of the season, they were so just dominant and nobody could defeat them, that it was going to take a miracle of gigantic proportions for somebody else other than a Mercedes driver to turn it around. I mean, even Valtteri Bottas driving the same car as Lewis Hamilton couldn't catch him, but that's a different story. But Ferrari, I think they need to regroup, they need to refocus, but they're starting to really plan ahead towards next year. And I'm really curious to see how it's going to go, because they believe that they've got a car that's going to be a contender for next year. And they've already committed to the reveal date for their new contender for next year, and they launched their car this year on February 15th. But they did tell motorsport.com this week that they're going to be unveiling the car on February 11th, which is 8 days before testing begins. So Binotto says that they're going to launch the car very early, and he said he believes that they're going to be the earliest out of all the teams. So he goes on to say that the reason that they're they're having such an early launch and unveiling is that they want to move on and do some dyno testing before they go on to Barcelona. Well, it sounds like from what he's been saying, what I've read elsewhere, they've got a pretty intense preseason winter testing going on, and so that's going to really getting the early launch and all the fanfare out of the way early will really let them buckle down and focus on what they need to do. Anyways, I got a little bit out of order in my notes there, and we were just talking just now just about Charles Leclerc and the excellent season that he had this year. Anyways, he said, and this is Charles himself, said his first year as a Ferrari driver was better than he expected because he didn't believe he would score such good results in 2019. And again, I mean, it was almost unprecedented that that he moved up to Ferrari after just one season in Formula One, and that 1 year with Sauber. And I mean, that's why I think it was so disappointing Bahrain when he had the mechanical problems at the end of the race, because I mean, he should have won that race from pole position. And it took quite a long time before he was able to get that first win that came in Belgium after the summer break in August. But I mean, he scored 7 poles, which was more than anyone else, and he had 2 victories, 8 podiums, and he finished 4th in the championship and 24 points ahead of Sebastian Vettel, his teammate. I mean, Vettel had his moments again, where he had obviously he had some car problems and some issues of his own, and then in Montreal he fell afoul of the stewards because he went off the track going into the chicane while he was leading Lewis Hamilton, and then he was penalized for that unsafe re-entry to the track and all that. So I mean, Charles, he had an excellent season. I mean, he's proven, and we just knew last year how good this guy was. I mean, he was so much better in that Sauber than his teammate Marcus Ericsson, you just knew that this guy could probably go out there with anything on 4 wheels and fly around there and set some incredibly quick lap times for a Formula One race or a qualifying session, whatever it might be. So it I think he was rewarded for his efforts this year, and I'm very impressed. And much like I sing the or praise Max Verstappen or laud him as a future Formula One world champion, is the thing is for me that Leclerc is very much cut from the same mold. And just going back to the email that Richard LeBlanc sent us, one of the other items that he put in there is that the possibility of Verstappen going to Ferrari, which could be seen as a replacement for Sebastian Vettel, and then sets up what he calls a, quote, fiery combination of Leclerc and Verstappen. And, well, I mean, that would be fiery because those two guys did have a couple of comings together throughout the year, and that's really setting up for an interesting rivalry in the future, and that's one that we have to, I think, look forward to in the years to come. Whether or not those two guys would function together in a team, that is a fascinating scenario. Could you have two alpha dogs like that in a team? I mean, Max is a little bit more, I mean, he's not quite as chill as and relaxed as Charles Leclerc is, but I mean, on the track, I mean, they let their driving do the talking. And I don't know whether that would be one of those situations where they would work well together, or that has a potential to be, say, a Hamilton and Rosberg. Although, I mean, that's maybe not a fair comparison because, I mean, Nico Rosberg was good, but he wasn't Hamilton-level good. I mean, that to me, having Verstappen and Leclerc in the same team, that seems to me to be more like a Prost Senna kind of pairing. I mean, both of them multiple world champions, and there was some fire there. I mean, Senna, the one guy that he just did not want to yield any or give any quarter to, was Alain Prost, and I kind of wonder whether if we were to see Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc in the same team, that it would be a similar kind of situation. Anyways, time for one final break here on the podcast, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right. Well, welcome back to the podcast. Just a couple of items to go through as we start to wind down the show this week. Going back to Mercedes, they say that they will be in Formula One for the long term if they're able to reduce the contribution from Daimler. And this is according to team principal Total Wolff. So earlier this year, Mercedes accounting revealed that in 2018, they revealed a net contribution from Daimler of less than £40 million, with the Formula One prize money and sponsorship, which footed the most of their budget. So they have shown no signs of wishing to withdraw or pull out of Formula One after next season. I mean, they've talked about it occasionally that they may pull out of Formula One, but it wasn't so much a threat that they didn't like the discussion or the way that the discussions were going, but it was just kind of more, it seemed like a reasonable kind of thing to say was, well, if the new regulations don't suit us, then maybe we'll have to rethink our position and decide whether or not we want to stay here or not. But I mean, I think it's great news if they want to stay in Formula One for the long term. I know over the years I've complained from time to time that I get a little bit bored watching them win each and every weekend, but Formula One needs teams like this, needs teams like Mercedes. Again, they are a fantastically organized team. They got some great drivers. It's a fantastic company, brand recognition around the world, obviously. And they're very much a benefit to Formula One. I think that I don't think we can really lay any blame at their doorstep that they're ruining the sport. I think that their success is the result of some very, very hard work and all the research and development that they put into these cars. They've had some great drivers over the years, and they continue to do so. And it's very much that that the Mercedes is the best. They're the one winning all the championships and all the races. It's time for somebody to step up. So it's promising to hear that they're going to be around, because I couldn't really picture Formula One without them very much. Like I couldn't picture Formula One without Ferrari. And that's why I think that it was this whole process of the whole discussions that have gone on for so long about the rules and the future of Formula One in 2021 was fascinating from many aspects, and least of all because it was the first time on record that Ferrari had not threatened to pack up their toys and go home, because it seemed like any time there were any discussions in the past that that was their default stance was, oh well, this agreement's coming up, we're going to pull out of Formula One, we don't like it because of this or that. Every time something seemed like it was up in the air, then more often than not there were threats from Ferrari they were going to withdraw. I mean, they changed coffee vendors. Okay, well, we're going to pull out of Formula One. I'm just being silly now. Anyways, Lewis Hamilton said that 2019 went from a, quote, heap of a car to best season ever. And he was just referring to the W10, which obviously won them a heap of races this year, pun intended. Anyhow, Lewis had to say, quote, when we started the season, our car was actually a real heap to drive. It wasn't that great looking at testing. We couldn't get it quite in the window. And it wasn't until the last day that we got it to work. And when we went to the first race and we already had some great results. It's been a good year. It's been the best year, I would say, in my whole career. So it's interesting how it went from one extreme to the other. And they really... they continue to be the gold standard. I mean, love them or hate them, they really do set the bar very, very high. And I think that's why it's been difficult for so many other teams to catch them over the years. It's just that they are just so good at what they do, period. Anyways, talking about a team that wants to be like Mercedes is a team that's going to get to Mercedes engines in 2021, and that's McLaren. And they are planning a massive departure with their new Formula One simulator. And that's according to their new technical chief, James Key. So this year, McLaren had a very, very good year. They were fourth in World Championship. They were regulars in Q3. They were, for the first year, well, I mean, they've been slowly getting better over the past couple of years. But this year was a marked improvement for them across the board. Like I say, I mean, they were regulars in Q3. Number of double points finishes. Carlos Sainz got a podium. in Brazil. Okay, be it a little bit after the fact, because Lewis Hamilton was given that penalty for crashing into Alex Albon at the end of the race. But anyways, you get a third place. It is what it is, no matter how you get it. But I mean, it's been the culmination of a bit of a long process in which the CEO Zach Brown has put some very important people like Key into the organization. Andreas Seidel's another one. Team principal coming over from the Porsche LMP1 project. And they're going in the right direction. And fourth in world championship for them is very, very good after the nightmare and the hell that they've been in for many, many years. I mean, let's be honest, as good as this year was, there's still a long way to go for McLaren. I mean, there was the one podium that they got. They still have, in my mind at any rate, a bit of a quantum leap that they need to achieve before they can even become regulars challenging for podium. So they have to go from where they are now, fighting with the likes of, say, Renault, Toro Rosso, those sort of second tier teams in Formula One. They need to bridge that gap and cross the divide and start fighting it out with teams like Red Bull. And that seems like a very big thing to ask. But slowly but surely, they're getting it done. And they do. And one of the things that they said is that they were looking to put like a lot of resources into their the development of the car for next year, even if it might compromise their season this year. They're not really staying faithful to one concept. They're really thinking, or they're really open to looking outside of the box and coming up with orthodox solutions. So the thinking for me is right. They're not just have a very narrow and a very linear approach to what they're looking to do there. And this is just another example of it. And Key goes on to say, quote, "We've got a new driver in the loop simulator. It's a massive departure to what we've been using. It's a project that McLaren pioneered a long time ago, but it's also been recognized now that the world has moved on too. And that's a big project with the team. I'm hoping it will come on by next year." So their simulator was once state of the art, and developing a new version of it was one of the number one things in the area of technological evaluations. And again, like I was saying that earlier in the show about Mercedes and the relationship that they have with Daimler and the trust and everything that they put in Total Wolf and the organization to do what they do, I think that at McLaren, Zach Brown has done a very good job and very quietly, I think, as well, that slowly rebuilding that organization from the ground up, getting good people in at key positions and letting them get about with their work. I mean, I don't think he really goes. I don't think he wants a lot of publicity. I think that's something else. I think he just appears to me, at any rate, just be a guy that just goes into work, sees what needs to be done, and just really focuses on what the ultimate goal is. And I think when you look at these key appointments throughout the organization, that he's clearly doing that, and each one of these people that he brings in is just another step, another piece in the puzzle of that vision that they have and working towards the goals that they need or they want to meet in Formula One. Like I say, phenomenal year, great year for them this year, but still a long way to go. Anyways, just moving a little bit laterally from McLaren to Williams, another team that used to be a competitor, a main rival of McLaren way back in the day, and that's Williams. And Sir Patrick Head, who was the chief designer, the big tech head there back in the day, he had to say that Formula One needed the regressive rules for Formula One by reducing engineering freedoms. And he says it's a necessary evil to stop the spending wars from ruining the sport. And it is, the thing is, the new regs for 2021 are aimed at making the racing better. And, they want to reduce the aero wake and the dirty air behind the cars so that they can close the gaps between them. And therefore, if you can follow the car in front of you closer, therefore the racing will be closer, and that'll lead to more opportunities for overtaking. Anyways, Head had to say, quote, "I think from some point point of view, the engineering side, it's regressive, really, unfortunately. But ultimately, motorsport has become far too expensive, and the difference between the top teams and the teams lower down is too big. We need to have more teams racing together. I think the people involved have done a good job. I wouldn't say it's unfair to say it's been dumbed down, because definitely the cleverer engineers will find ways and means of making a difference, but there are certainly not quite freedoms that were there when I was more involved. So, that is interesting. And I think that he makes a good point, and that that the cleverer engineers, as he put it, will find ways and means of making a difference and finding these loopholes in the regs and a way to exploit them, or just are just smart in the way that they go about their design and maybe not exploiting the rules per se, but finding a way to make their design and work them to the most optimum within the regulations. Anyway, so going from Williams and Sir Patrick Head to Racing Point, and their technical director, Andrew Green, believes that the 2021s cars are going to be, quote, nasty pieces of work to drive. And he believes this is due to the airflow that will come off the front wing that will make them unpredictable. And he says, quote, I think there are areas that could do with being freed up around the front wing. Around the front of the car, I think it's incredibly restrictive to the point where it's really going to hurt the handling of the car. It's going to be a real nasty piece of work to drive. I think it's something that if they allowed a little more freedom would allow us to sort that out, but still retain the intent of ground effect car and low following wake. So it is interesting to hear that that a guy like Green believes that that these new regs, although they're well intentioned, they're going to be producing quite amount of dirty air. So again, we'll have to wait and see how it pans out. Everything is of course all theoretical at this point. And, we got another year to wait and see see how reality comes out. Anyways, Chase Carey, the big boss at Formula One, said that that sponsors' interest has been on what he calls a steady rise in Formula One. He said it's proved a little bit harder than expected to sell major sponsorship deals, but he said that interest from potential partners is on the up, which is good. I mean, Formula One needs exposure, needs sponsors, and he has not really added to the core group of what they call the global partners that were put together on Bernie Ecclestone. And these are the companies like Heineken, DHL, Pirelli, Emirates, Rolex, some fantastic brands in there. But there are some rumblings that on the inside, some hints that maybe one major name is going to be announced for next season. We'll see whether or not that comes to be. But I mean, like I say, I mean, sponsorship and Formula One, it always seems to be the luxury brands and things like that. It sort of goes hand in hand. Anyway, Lewis Camilleri, the Ferrari chairman, praised Liberty Media and what they brought to Formula One. And he thinks that the Netflix series Drive to Survive has really boosted the sports image. And I mean, if you have Netflix and you haven't seen Drive to Survive, it came out about a year ago. It was last winter. I don't remember if it came out before or after Christmas. Anyways, it's like 8 or 10 episodes long, and it is a recap of the entire 2018 season. It's a little bit disappointing because that year the big fight was between Ferrari and Mercedes, and neither of those teams participated officially in it. And any clip you see of Hamilton or Vettel or Kimi Raikkonen or Bottas or anybody involved with those two teams is just sort of standard news footage and in the media scrums and news conferences and stuff like that. And I wouldn't say it takes away from it, but it's not as good as the rest of the series, where some of it's really, it's candid, it's frank. I think that Gunther Steiner, team principal, he came out of that one a bit of a rock star when people got to see what he was like. I think that a lot of the behind the scenes stuff with Danny Ricciardo and like the whole thought process and the whole saga, if you want to call it that, the whole thing that he went through when he made the decision to switch to Renault. That was interesting to see, and I thought one of the best parts was the animosity and the low grade aggression, if you want to call it that, between Christian Horner and Cyril Abiteboul from Renault. That was fantastic to see as well. But you know, all in all, I mean, it was a great series, and this year I think that with the season that's going to come out, season two, whenever that's going to be, I mean, no official date has been announced yet that I'm aware of, and like most of you, I'm on Netflix probably more days out of the week than is probably healthy, but that is what it is. But if it's anything like season one, and this year you have the added boost of having all the teams involved, including Mercedes and Ferrari, I think is going to be really, really good. But Camilleri really thinks that series really did boost Formula One, and I think it was good. I mean, if it gets other people interested in it, and I mean, for someone like me who's a hardcore fan, has been a fan of Formula One for decades, I really got immersed in, even though you know, there were so many different storylines going on and there was a little bit of racing, it was kind of cool to see how it all kind of wove in together. Because I mean, when we're going in to watch that series, there was nothing that was really a surprise from the point of view of what happened on the track. I mean, they kind of bounced around. I mean, it wasn't kind of like a linear kind of progression from Australia all the way to Abu Dhabi. It did kind of generally follow the flow of the season, but it was pretty cool how they kind of wove it all together, and all the stories that we talked about, not only on this podcast, but a lot of the things that happened in races, a lot of the news stories that made the headlines over the course of the 2018 season. It was really cool. So I'm really looking forward to the new season two of Drive to Survive, and I hope that they're able to keep it going beyond this year and into 2020, and hopefully for a lot longer. Anyways, just a couple of quick things here before we wrap it up. The F1 teams have unanimously decided to reject the Pirelli 2020 tire specs, or they're going to keep with the 2019 spec instead. Ferrari, they didn't seem, Pirelli were a bit nonplussed about it. They were just like, well, whatever, and if they want to go with it, that's fine. If they want to stick with 2019 tire specs and compounds, that's fine with us, because we just have to know what compounds and we're going to be using for our tires. So anyways, it didn't really get lots of positive reviews, but they've decided that they're not going to go with it. And finally, Vietnam has revealed an updated layout for the circuit in Hanoi at the Hanoi City track, which is going to now have an extra corner, having 23 turns instead of 22, which is going to increase the length of the lap of just to just over a hair of 5.6 kilometer long. So it was triggered by logistical and geographical reasons, and this was made because following a request from the FIA and Formula One. So it's also parts of the track has been widened by about 15 meters, and the added corner, which will be finalized in January, the big change to it, like I say, it was widened by about 15 meters. So I'm really looking forward to it. As much as I'm a bit of a traditionalist and I love the Silverstones and the Spas and the Monzas and all the historic tracks in Formula One, because it's part of the DNA, part of Formula One's genes. I do like to see different places, different exotic destinations, and I start to smile when I think about some of the places I want to go and watch a Grand Prix when I get an opportunity. So it's always going to be a bit different, and we don't know what it's going to what to expect with the new track, but it is an interesting kind of layout, the way that it goes. There's a couple of very long straightaways and some very tight, twisty technical sections, but all in all, it looks like it could be interesting. So really looking forward to that race, and I don't want to talk about too much longer, but it's still a long way to go, but at least it's going to come, the race in Vietnam at towards the beginning of the season, and it's scheduled to go on April 5th, 2020. Anyways, that's a good time to leave it. I thought that if I was able to get 30 minutes out of the show this week, that would be great, but we're up over an hour. So like I said, right off the very top, there were lots of things to talk about, and was really glad that it worked out. Anyways, If you heard anything on the show that you'd like to talk to me about, you got any feedback, comments, anything at all, just the easiest way to get is get in touch. Email scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. And you can also tweet me on the Twitters at scuderiaf1pod. Again, thank you for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to do us a solid and help us grow the show, easiest way is to leave a five-star rating review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you download and listen to podcasts. And that would really be appreciated by us here, and would be very, very kind of you to consider that and to do so. And we're very appreciative of anybody that that has left a five-star rating and review, or any review at all. Feedback in any shape or form helps us focus and improve the show in any way. So we appreciate all your thoughts and comments and emails and tweets whenever we get them from you. Anyways, I've said enough. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the holiday season. And we'll talk to you guys again this time next week. That's a wrap. I'm out of here. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.